Here to dive into industry trends with leading ETF experts, this is ETF Spotlight with Nina Mishra.
Hello and welcome to ETF Spotlight. I'm your host, Nina Mishra. My guest today is Kathleen Smith, chairman and co-founder of Renaissance Capital, which is a global IPO investment advisory firm. So we are talking about the IPO market and IPO ETFs today. Kathy, welcome back. Great to have you on the show.
Thank you, Nina. Delighted to be here.
So capital markets have been very hot this year, which makes sense because of the rising stock markets and extraordinary fiscal and monetary support all over the world. So global companies, they raised trillions of dollars in debt as well as equity this year. And even the IPO market has been very, very hot. And I read in the Wall Street Journal recently that money raised by newly public companies in 2021, which includes SPACs too. We'll be talking about SPACs a little bit later. But that money is already the highest on record for any full year. So this comes after a blockbuster 2020. So talk to us about the IPO market this year. How many companies have gone public? How much is the money raised? And how does that compare with 2020?
Sure. And you made the point, and a good one, that with the markets up, and we know from looking at the IPO index, which is tracked by the Renaissance IPO ETF, the returns in 2020 were so strong, and that, we believe, really opened the floodgates of the issuance that we're seeing in 2021. So far in 2021, we've had $107 billion in capital raised by a little over 310 issuers. That is an incredible number. The $107 billion in capital raised is a record number of all time. And that compares to the full year of 2020 when $78 billion was raised. So we're already well ahead of 2020, and we are in the record book. And this is just for the regular way IPO market. When it comes to other, and finally, I think market is addressing, I've always been asked, is the IPO market dead? And there's been so many complaints, and maybe the company should do a SPAC or a direct listing. Well, this year, I think, basically puts down the question about the IPO market being dead, because it certainly is not. This has been just an all-time record. Then if you add in SPACs, as you mentioned, we're at another $118 billion raised, 116 or 118 roughly. And that's also, you know, there is not the kind of history there, but that's also a very large amount of capital. So all told, over $200 billion, not to mention direct listings, which don't actually raise new capital, but they are a method for going public and adding registered shares to the market. And we've seen about $50 billion of registered shares enter the market through direct listings. So we're at all-time records. And these are good times for issuers. A lot happening.
So we have seen some very high-profile IPOs this year, Robinhood, Bumble, then Coinbase and Warby Parker, which took the direct listing route. So last year, we had seen a lot of new economy, technology-focused companies going public. So is that the trend this year as well in terms of sector exposure?
Yes, we would say that it's maybe a little less broad-based this year than it was. I think there's more skepticism regarding some e-commerce. But where the market is really focused in IPOs in 2021 has been on enterprise software companies. That's still a really important theme. And in addition, there's still continues to be a lot of healthcare companies. And even though there's strength in that segment, but I would say more than anything in the healthcare services side. And then the payment processors continue to issue and have interest among investors. where, and that's the fintech side, I would say where we're losing traction in the IPO market has definitely been with Asian IPOs that have tapped the US market, particularly Chinese IPOs, which have really done poorly because China has, and its companies have done poorly even in trading in Hong Kong. So that's a weakness. And we're seeing a little less in the e-commerce side, but a continued interest in technology when it comes to software and payment processors.
So how does the outlook for the rest of the year look? Which are the biggest unicorns that are expected to make their public debut in the coming months?
We have an incredible list of companies that are targeting the market and to come out before the end of the year. And I would start already on file is a huge IPO by an electric SUV kind of truck company called Rivian. That IPO is expected to be $6 billion in size. And it's a big company. It's losing a lot of money, but it's a big company with backing from Amazon. The other one that investors have been looking for that is on file now is Global Foundries. We think that could be a $2 billion IPO. That is a US-based semiconductor foundry where we haven't seen a US-based foundry in a long time. The Japanese sort of put the US out of business and the Chinese over the years, but now it looks like we have our own US-based semiconductor foundry. That's a big company with $5 billion in sales, and it's profitable. And I could go down the list. Some more well-known ones that are on file that we expect to see are GitLab. This company makes coding tools. It's a well-known tech company. Allbirds, that makes sustainable footwear. Portillo's, I'll call it a hot dog chain. So we're starting to see some restaurant chains. That's a little bit of a new development. And in the food group, Vita Coco, they make the coconut water. So these are companies that are on file that we are going to be seeing before the year's out.
Oh, yes, some very interesting and well-known companies. So we would definitely be watching their debut. Now, you mentioned Allbirds. And one thing which I noticed about Allbirds and trend in general is that some of these IPOs are trying to emphasize that their mission is to do good and not just profits. And we know that ESG investing is one of the hottest trends in the market lately. And in fact, ESG ETFs have gathered billions in inflows, both from institutional as well as individual investors who want to make this world a better place. Now, these companies, for example, Allbirds, they recently announced that theirs would be the first sustainable IPO. And they talked about the SPO framework, though I read that they have walked back some of those SPO framework comments lately. Then Greek yogurt maker Chobani, which is also expected to make its debut, they have been talking about how they are transforming the food system for the betterment of the planet and for the people. Rent the Runway, I read that they have been emphasizing that how renting clothes is better for the environment and it reduces carbon footprint. It is much better than buying. So do you think this is a new trend in the IPO market too, that companies will emphasize their ESG metrics, how their companies are doing good for the society and the environment?
It's an interesting one. And we think that ESG, or the sustainability headline for companies and developing products, it's a great marketing tool. Customers are interested in companies that they feel, or products that they feel, are environmentally friendly. But I will say that when it comes from an investing standpoint, I think they can stay with their focus on the products. And if it helps sell the products, that's great. But I would like to add something from an investor standpoint about sustainability. And I think we ought to have a category called sustainable cash flow and profits. And I believe that that's probably the most important thing for investors to look at with these companies. Because let's admit that even Allbirds has to ship And shipping is not carbon neutral to get even rent the runway. It sounds good, but there's still a lot of things they have to do that we're talking about, just purchases. Those in and of themselves and goods and delivery still increase. The consumption still is not necessarily the most environmentally friendly category. But if it sells products, great. What we would like to see is financially sustainable companies. And I'd like to create a new category because that's what we look for when we're analyzing companies and figuring out which ones we think will have long-term success in investors' portfolios.
Yeah, I totally agree with you. Sustainable cash flows are very important. These companies know that it is very important to be included in these ESG indexes, and we have heard about so much of greenwashing too in order to attract and retain millennial talent. So yes, investors should focus on sustainable cash flows. I totally agree with you. Now let's talk about the performance, and you talked a little bit about performance. You alluded to the performance earlier. So last year was a blockbuster year for your IPO ETF. And this year, in fact, it is down slightly for the year. Now, last year's performance mainly came from pandemic-driven trends because many of these companies, they either are, in the new economy, technology companies that benefited from pandemic-driven trends, including e-commerce, cloud computing, video gaming, or software, cybersecurity, et cetera. And many companies were focused on the virus treatments or testing or vaccines too. This year, the performance is, as I mentioned, it is the index is down year to date. So talk to us about the performance this year and which are the best and worst performing companies within the ETF.
First of all, the performance is still pretty good given the rise of the ETF in 2020 that was so incredible. So the fact that the returns are still, even though they're slightly negative, they've still, from a year-over-year basis, are still pretty attractive. And I wouldn't give up on the concept of the new economy. The new economy will work in all different kinds of economies, and companies adapt. So the year-over-year change is still pretty good. And you're getting out of this product companies that are not yet fully included in major indices. So these are companies that, if they're good enough competitively and they're interesting new economy businesses, should provide the performance. Now, this is an equity ETF, and it will have some of the volatility, of course, of the overall stock market, which has become volatile recently with the outlook for some rising rates. And that has spooked the overall market and causes growth companies to get reassessed on their valuations. But still, once the investors figure out where we are in terms of interest rates, they're going to come back and look at growth companies and profitable companies, the sustainable ones. So this is an opportunity for investors to hold the new economy and new economy companies, and maybe benefit at a time where we're getting a little bit of pullback because of some worries about interest rates that are going to work themselves out. And I still think investors will turn their eyes to this category. So we talked about some of the companies that have been recently added. Robinhood is a new addition to our index also, and that has performed fairly well. Qualtrics, which is a software company, provider of experience management software, is a part of the index that's had very strong performance. We own some of the top holdings, include CrowdStrike, which is a cybersecurity software company. And Uber has performed well recently. So we're getting some good performance. I would say that if anything that has dragged down our returns more than anything has been the holdings in DD Global, which just retreated when China started to crack down on its internet companies and had been one of the larger IPOs that tapped the US market this year. So the Chinese companies that had listed here caused a pull down in returns in the ETF. And I think that in time, when the Chinese work out what's happening, these are major companies. DD Global is the dominant provider of ride sharing in China. So the Chinese economy will continue to do what it does, and it'll come out of, you know, some of this turbulence that we're seeing now.
So I agree with you that some of the pandemic-driven trends may become permanent, but still investors are worried about rising interest rates, particularly in the context of these new economy, new technology companies. And we have seen that because many of these have projected earnings in the future. So rising interest rates would make those earnings less attractive. So what would you tell investors who are worried about the impact of rising rates on these new technology companies?
Well, rising rates affect sort of the allocation of where investors put capital between the bond market or the stock market. And it has an effect if rates rise in terms of the present value of future earnings. But remember that if a company has a strong business and we're in this an inflationary time that's causing rates to rise, a good company should be able to increase prices. So once this reconciles itself, companies that have pricing power are going to be the ones that are sought after for long-term investors. And that's where I think you're going to find the companies that are in these indices that we manage. The indices are weighted by market cap. So it's the larger, more liquid, newly public companies that are in this index. And they should, many of them, not all, but the philosophy of how this is put together should give us companies that have industry dominance and pricing power. And that should be good in the long term. In the short run, we have turbulence. It provides opportunities for investors to, you know, come in when there's a pullback. And pullbacks in this right now in this market, a lot have been due to valuations. There's been a great valuation run up. Investors have really wanted to own growth companies while interest rates have been so low. So we'll have some turbulence, but I think long-term investors who are looking at balancing portfolios are still going to look at wanting some exposure to the new economy companies. I mean, it tells you that the IPO market is working. Investors are coming in owning newly public companies. Prices adjust when they come into the market, and investors don't come in if they don't think they're going to earn returns. So we have a lot of interest in new companies that are coming out by the smartest investors. So I wouldn't worry too much. This is a part of equities. Equities have volatility, and it gives investors opportunities to participate.
So you mentioned DD, which has been one of the big drags on the performance of the IPO ETF. And I saw that the stock price is down more than 50% from its debut. And that is mainly because of the Chinese government's crackdown on these technology companies and IPO, which would have been one of the biggest IPOs ever, that was shelved after Alibaba founder Jack Ma, he made some critical comments about Chinese regulators. And I read that many Chinese IPOs, which were earlier planning to list on the US exchanges, they have changed their plans in the aftermath of the regulatory crackdown, and they are now listing in Hong Kong. So it seems that Chinese and Hong Kong IPO market is still very hot. I saw that Indian IPO market has also been very hot. Zomato, which is a food delivery startup, which is backed by the Ant Group, that made its debut recently. It has done pretty well. Then Paytm, which is a digital payment startup, which is backed by SoftBank and many other high-profile investors, they are planning to IPO soon. And also The Indian government is considering selling about 10% stake in the state-owned life insurance companies, which would be the country's biggest IPO ever. Mm-hmm. And we have seen some interesting IPOs in Europe as well, and more in the pipeline. So talk to us about your IPO, international IPO ETF and international IPO market.
Yes, there's a similar story with the international IPO ETF in that the returns in 2020 were very strong. They were, the index that it tracks was up over 50%. However, since about 40% of the index exposure is China or China-related companies that have gone public in Hong Kong that are basically businesses operating in China. And therefore, the 2021 returns have been poor. The index is down about 19%. It's in a correction, but it's largely due to these Chinese holdings. It's been, it's not been a strong time in the Hong Kong IPO market. And so this product has had weakness in 2021. And I think that some of that will work itself out. But while the Chinese government is, besides cracking down the internet companies, is also going through issues that are coming out in its leveraged housing market, investors are being very cautious about owning Chinese companies. So we're in a bit of a challenging situation. We've had strong performance from European IPOs and North American that are in this index, but China, which is the bulk of the holdings, has really hurt the index this year.
Now, switching gears a little bit, I also wanted to talk about SPACs. And I know that your ETFs do not include SPACs. They include IPOs and direct listings. But I know that you and your company have done some research on the performance of SPACs and, in fact, SPACs or blank check companies, which were very, very hot earlier this year. We saw so many celebrities and billionaire investors launching their own SPACs. That bubble has burst. And in fact, now many SPACs are trading at deep discounts. Many of them haven't even found a target yet. So tell us about your thoughts on SPACs, the difference between SPACs and IPOs, and why investors should prefer to invest in IPOs versus SPACs.
SPACs have a bias in that companies that agree to get, so a SPAC is a blind pool, and companies that agree to get acquired by a SPAC as a way to go public or provide liquidity to investors tend to be companies that could not go public, that aren't strong enough to withstand the scrutiny of the regular public market. So they tend to be story stocks, companies that may have weak balance sheets and need to tell a story of future profits may be money-losing companies currently. So those are companies that have a hard time tapping the regular U.S. IPO market, and that's what we've seen, and that is why we have a less attractive group and that the performance is not as good. The other thing is that the sponsors of a SPAC tend to add a lot. There's quite a bit of dilution of the sponsor ownership in a SPAC. And then many SPACs who do not have enough capital to make an acquisition and they don't have it because investors in SPACs are more frequently now selling ahead of a merger, meaning that the company to do the merger has to raise outside capital at a dilutive price. So that those dynamics all put together have caused SPACs to both be a poor investment at first for investors, for example, current year to date, only 30% of the SPACs that have been done are trading above issue, where in the regular way IPO market, about close to 50% trade above issue. And then when there's a de-SPAC or the merger's done and you're there holding the company that the SPAC has acquired, the average return is negative. And so our study, that has resulted in a very dramatic slowdown in SPAC issuance and, you know, questions about whether the structure needs a little more attention. Even the regulator's been looking at the structure because it needs a certain amount of disclosure and understanding by investors. It's very expensive to do a SPAC because it's not just an IPO document, it's a merger document with all the costs associated with that, accounting, legal. So they're expensive propositions and the results have not been so good. We think that they'll figure out a way to make these work, and we might find some better structures that could help. But we do have a successful operating regular IPO market. So that's the market where it seems that the better companies are tapping and might be the better market to be looking at if you're looking for better returns.
Excellent points. That's all we have time for today. Kathy, thanks so much for joining us.
Thank you.
Thanks for listening. If you like our show, please leave us a rating on iTunes or wherever you get your podcast. And also make sure to subscribe so that you do not miss any episode. If you have any comments, questions, or suggestions, please email podcast@sax.com.
This material is being provided for informational purposes only, and nothing herein constitutes investment, legal, accounting, or tax advice, or a recommendation to buy, sell, or hold a security. Do not act or rely upon the information and advice given in this podcast without seeking the services of competent and professional legal, tax, or accounting counsel. Publication and distribution of this podcast is not intended to create, and the information contained herein does not constitute an attorney-client relationship. No recommendation or advice is being given as to whether any investment or strategy is suitable for a particular investor. It should not be assumed that any investments in securities, companies, sectors, or markets identified and described were or will be profitable. All information is current as of the date herein and is subject to change without notice. Any views or opinions expressed may not reflect those of Zacks Investment Research as a whole.